Collectively, their film, Tending the Garden, is a journey through a year in the life of three family farms cultivating cannabis, food, and community in the pursuit of a regenerative future. Welcome to the show. What's up, Jesse? What's up, Claire?
Hello.
Hey.
Welcome. How are you?
Thank you. Good.
Always.
Insanely gorgeous.
Can you tell our audience, where are you joining us this evening?
Trinidad, California. Right,
yes.
On the coast.
Yes.
Far northern California.
Yeah, that's a wonderful spot. Wonderful spot. And how are your... How is the garden? Tending the garden. How is the garden?
The film is the back. I mean, the garden's so gorgeous in the morning this time of year.
Everything that's what I'm asking. Yeah, yeah. Your actual plants.
So happy. The soil's alive. We're in a place that's pretty wet, and it's where the forest comes into the ocean. And this time of year is just vigorous growth. Peas are reaching. Cannabis is happy. Just everything is blooming. The birds are singing.
And we actually got a lot of rain in May, so things are still really green and lush.
Wow. Give thanks for the rain. How blessed. That's awesome. So sweet. Well, it's so special to connect with you both. We've been trying to manifest this conversation for some time, and this exciting film is cathartic. It's very, very important. It's very timely. We've had a lot of the farms on the show. And how did you two connect? How did you two become one?
Well, Jesse started the Regenerative Cannabis Farm Award in 2016. And just through some mutual friends, I was also not really involved in making films about cannabis, but I grew up in Humboldt and was making films about other things. But, you know, around the time of legalization I was starting to become more interested in, like, you know, there was this opportunity that finally people were coming out of the shadows and being able to tell their stories. Through some mutual friends, connected with Jesse and Dan Marr, who was of High Tide Permaculture. They were traveling around to all these farms that had applied for the award. And, they said, meet me in Covelo. And
nice.
The first farm I went to was Radical Herbs. And that was the first time that we really met each other and got to spend time on this amazing biodynamic farm. And, that was the beginning, making short films for these people who had applied for the awards, the farmers, and then the winners of the award. You know, when they get up on stage to accept the award at the Emerald Cup, they got to play the videos that we made. And so we picked, for the film, we picked three of the farms that were really, like, shining examples of community, growing amazing cannabis, of course, but growing vegetables. And, there's all these kind of pillars of the award that we thought, you know, it'd be great to make a longer film, pick three of the farms, follow them throughout the year, and then... just tell that story to a broader audience.
And the award Claire's talking about is the Regenerative Cannabis Farm Award that we do at the Emerald Cup. Started about years back where we wanted to just showcase the farms that are doing it right for the environment and for the community, just showing the practices behind the cannabis and honor the farms for the practices that are thoughtful about the environment and are connected to community and are based in mutualism and watershed consciousness and soil building and sun grown and just really show how beautiful that work is and connect people to that. And the best way to do that sometimes is through media. And yeah, meeting Claire at Radical Herbs is just immediately like this is working. And then when we got to see those videos up on stage at the Emerald Cup with thousands of people watching, all excited for all of the different cannabis awards that were coming out. But then we get to connect people to an amazing biodynamic farm and some of the biggest, most beautiful plants you could imagine that are just grown from the soil and through good practices and not from bottles and not from all this resource, excessive type of cultivation practices.
Was the film a happy accident, or did you go to Covolo with the intention of creating a feature film?
No, the first one was just to make a short so people could see what this award was about, so people could connect to that farm. But after doing all these, it just seemed like it made a lot of sense to follow some of these farms with incredible practices and show what it's like throughout the year. And there's just so many things that are happening with cannabis right now, both in the difficulties with regulation and with all kinds of resource excessive types of cultivation happening everywhere. But it seemed important to really put a light on the farms that are thinking about the environment, thinking about the community, and growing with permaculture practices, with polyculture, with building soil, with sequestering carbon, because that could be the future, you know. And
yes.
And we're at that crossroads right now where cannabis could go down the same direction as the rest of agriculture. So, like, we want to seize on that moment and honor the people that are doing it right.
And so the three farms that are in the film are Radical Herbs, like you mentioned, they're in Covolo and Mendocino. Franklin Forest Farm, they're in southern Humboldt County. And Green Source Gardens, and they're in southern Oregon. I saw Jesse talking with Daniel from Bryceland at the Emerald Cup in 2017. Just kind of stumbled into the building to check out what was going on. And I was just intrigued that it seemed like there was a sort of a different focus happening, you know, within this kind of talking about the practices behind the flower, not just the THC percentage and not just the hype strains and, you know, using the platform of the Emerald Cup and then putting the videos on the internet. And, you know, you can, we kind of built the educational art project out over the past few years. And you can see, you know, you can learn more about that at regenerativecannabisfarming.org. So as that was all building, we kind of strategized about which, you know, it would have been great to include everyone who, you know, there's so many positive examples of farms doing amazing work, but we narrowed it down to three that we thought, they're already using their platform. If you follow them on Instagram, like, which is so many amazing pictures, beautiful pictures, especially Green Source. They have this pink weed, pinkleberry.
Yes.
Just really grabs your attention. And then once you're scrolling and then you go, whoa, what is that? And then maybe you take the time to read the caption, and they put in so much thoughtful education and inspiration out there through Instagram. I think, you know, they've really inspired a lot of people to go in a more regenerative direction.
Yeah, the pinkleberry is such a great regenerative Trojan horse. Like, you see, like, these insanely gorgeous flowers and these pink stigmas, and it's just, like, in the background of all this polyculture and the forest, and people immediately respond to it. They get tremendous likes and definitely built a following really quickly. And then, but behind it is all these amazing practices and ways of connecting to the source of how something is done, and the soil, the practices. They built all of their cultivation zone on a very degraded area, a place that had, you know, been overgrazed near mining areas. It was a hard serpentine slope that they built hugel cultures on, and did hundreds of years of soil building work, you know, in a over winter almost, just to get started. And every year since then, it's thrived more and more. And you've had some pretty amazing shows with Nick on from Green Source on there too. And I'd recommend people go back to the archives and listen to those shows, because he really lays out all the information in some of those shows.
Yeah, it's a spiritual homily almost every time I hear Nick, and likewise with you. It's just such an honor. It's so nice to connect with you both. I would love to hear, Claire, too, a little bit about your I love the approach with media, and I think the film approach is really timely. It's really important. I think it is very captivating, and a lot of people are hungry. They're hungry to learn. They're hungry to get more involved and to educate themselves. In your background, what other topics have you covered in film?
Well, actually, I went to UC Santa Cruz for grad school.
Woo! That's so cool. Full circle.
Your taco truck.
That's
yeah.
so sweet. Banana slug.
Yeah, so that was... Yep. That was almost 10 years ago. And, cool. Yeah, I was just really interested in food and farms and the food system. And actually driving down Highway 1 towards Watsonville, I saw there these taco trucks kind of cruising through the fields. And I was aware of taco trucks as far as, you know, they're in urban areas, they're in Oakland, they're, you know, parked on the street, but I hadn't really connected the dots of, oh, well, the farm workers in the strawberry fields, they also need to eat lunch. And so there's this whole kind of system within the food system of people providing, and, you know, mostly immigrants providing food for other farm workers. So I tagged along with a Salvadoran family who had a food truck business. And so that's a 20-minute short film called Lanche. And, yeah, that was a really cool opportunity to be able to, like, travel to Mexico, show it at a film festival in Mexico. And, yeah, that was I got a taste of, you know, how to, yeah, tell a story and got to, you know, see that it resonated with a broader audience. Since then, I've mostly been working on other people's films, doing, yeah, editing. I worked on a film called Freelance, which was filmed in Humboldt in 2018. And then, yeah, it was supposed to come out March of 2020 at South by Southwest. And then COVID timing ended up kind of, yeah, throwing a wrench in that. But, yeah, it is available to stream online now. And, that was really cool to be part of a fiction film that I didn't have much experience there. Pretty much had only worked on documentaries, but the directors, they also had a background in documentary film. They had come up to Humboldt a long time ago and were really intrigued by the culture and the community and, you know, met some really interesting characters. And then so they decided to write a script based on that. And so it's the story of a older woman, you know, she's a back-to-the-land homesteader, and she's running a farm. And then legalization happens and kind of throws her whole world. You know, she has to adapt to the changes. And so it's a pretty realistic portrait, I would say, of, you know, a woman going through this total change of lifestyle. And it's not exactly an uplifting film, but I think it really does.
It's real.
Capture the vibe of, you know, what's going on here. And there's a transition from one way of life is happening. So yeah, that was a really cool thing to be a part of. And then our film, I think, is hopefully a more hopeful depiction of the future, what it could look like if these farms who are, you know, they're not just growing industrial monoculture greenhouses, you know, blowing their whole scene up. These farms are really doing it in a more intentional way. And so, yeah, it's after things like Murder Mountain had a really big cultural impact, we thought, you know, that's not the whole story, and it's easier to sensationalize and talk about the dark side, and, you know, it's maybe less exciting to talk about regenerative farming, but I think we managed to do it in a way that hopefully that is compelling and visually interesting and spending enough time on the farms that, you know, it's hard to, if you just go to the farm for one visit at one time of the year, you're only going to see so much. But we were there throughout the whole season in the spring. They're starting seeds, came back in the summer, you know, showing that process. And different issues come up at different times of year. Drought, you know, wildfire was thankfully not a big issue last year, but is kind of a continuous threat to everyone.
Ongoing. Yes.
Yeah, and so, but we, you know, tried to highlight ways that, you know, Bryson Forest Farm, Daniel is really passionate about intentional burning and doing it at the right time of year and, you know, thinking of fire as a tool, not just something that, you know, there's ways to integrate it and to go back to these ancient practices of using fire. So that's a small part of the film, too, is all these things that farmers are doing beyond the farm to care for their environment.
Give thanks for that. What a wonderful, for posterity, too, to document this moment in time. And for the future, in many ways, the BioVortex project, the ongoing art contribution to the community. Jesse, you've had so many contributions. What does it feel like to be in the film space, IMBD?
Oh, man, it's so fun. I've always loved photography, and being able to work as a cinematographer with Claire is pretty amazing. To be able to capture these moments from the right angles, to see the kids growing up at this time.
Wow.
Yeah, to capture that year is such a special, amazing thing to be on these farms and seeing that level of life happening. Like the kids learning from the farm, the animals in an integrated relationship with the plants and the soil and the farms, the surrounding area being cared for. Just the whole year process is quite gorgeous and special. And we also get to eat amazing food as we film.
That's a nice one.
I joke that it's the best catered movie of all time for the least amount of money. 100% free food, but the best possible because it's all connected.
Nature
to
provides.
The
yes.
And I think there's something, and everyone is like now just absolutely dear friends. Like they already were, but being able to be with them through the year is really special. I love everyone that we got to I love everyone that's in the film very much, and it was an honor to be able to document the amazing work that they're doing.
I would love to hear a little bit about the process of documenting a year. In some of these farms, the families are growing, and the children, I heard a little bit about children from Jesse just now, but it's a big part of this too, is to kind of live what you preach. Nicholas and Elizabeth, the beautiful artwork, and they really do hold themselves accountable and humble themselves to this process of regenerative lifestyle, this approach to diversifying and stewarding the earth and building back better in a way that is most aligned with nature. And when I had Bryceland Forest Farm on the show recently too, they were speaking to the importance of especially in these tough times in the cannabis industry, in this really challenging market, to have the vegetables, to have these polyculture gardens, and to get back to the roots of just really wholesome and intentional agriculture. I would love to hear your thoughts and your observations of being what a cool experience to be on the scene with these really special families.
Well, like, cannabis is at the center of a lot of like what we're filming, but it's like they become kind of like these background plants as we're watching Bryceland feed an entire community. They are going to farmers market. They even organize their own Bryceland farmers market too, and have CSA, and to see this food being grown from amazing soil, and this soil, actually the process of making it more nutritious and fertile and growing better vegetables, they're also, and cannabis, they're also sequestering carbon at a amazing rate that I think the whole world needs to pay attention to. If we change agricultural practices towards these methods that actually build organic matter and carbon in the soil, we can potentially reverse climate change. And so to see it on this little half acre, Daniel and Taylor, through their no-till methods, through their cover cropping, through composting, through returning everything back, they started with 6% organic matter, which is actually pretty nice, you know, because they're in the forest, there's actually real organic matter and humus that had been built up in that area. But they took it from 6% to 24% organic matter.
Wow.
in just a few years of these practices. And at the same time, they're feeding a community and growing amazing cannabis. And if you if you take that half acre, I think it was 120 tons of carbon are sequestered through those processes, and that equates to about driving a car for about 30 years or so.
Whoa, amazing.
So, you know, we take that to the amount of land that's used for agriculture is huge if you add it all up. And just little tiny dents all over the place of people doing this kind of work, and also building the resiliency of having small localized food production. The more that we support those kinds of networks is maybe our best chance of survival on this planet.
And I would say that spending time at Radical Herbs, especially learning more about biodynamics, they're so tuned into the cycles and the seasons and the certain practices you do on the equinox. And for me, that was definitely a learning experience. I had no idea what biodynamics was, and it, you know, there's really not a good way, I think, to fully wrap your mind around it unless you see it and experience it. And
and that's where we started the film, too, is, yeah, like the unearthing of the 500 prep. Like, we went down on the equinox, yeah, and we witnessed the 500 prep, which is a cow manure put in a cow horn that's buried over the winter. And what happens is it kind of ferments in the soil, and it builds humus-building microbes. And there's a science side of it, like the actual things that are happening, because there are the microbes there. We understand fermentation. We understand that these humus-building microbes can break things down and build more soil, that there's ways to feed and give them oxygen and all that. But there's also this very spiritual side behind the practices, too, and the timing. And it was just kind of a perfect way to start the film, to see that spiritual connection between soil and also this concept of mutualism and giving back and gratitude for the earth and giving gifts back to the earth and thinking about how you can help and heal the earth through these interesting spiritual type practices that actually have a grounding quality to them, because they are building soil. They are creating more fertility for that garden, for that cultivation area.
Yes, I was just speaking with my wife this morning about biodynamics and Rudolf Steiner, and speaking about the future and education and Waldorf and other opportunities. And it is important to have that reverence. It's very special to continue that practice.
And if people want to go on a really deep dive down biodynamics at Radical Herbs, the Shaping Fire podcast, they did about a month back or more, but they go so deep into all the different practices. I think it's like 2 hours long. So people want to really learn about biodynamics. It's a good one.
No, it's important to that's a special group, right? A special family, because they are rooted in the biodynamics, and that is it's exciting. It's exciting to see that in practice, you know, the praxis in motion in the industry, but also like in the community, which is so important. And one thing that's coming up too is you're going back to Mexico, correct? For the film, right? The film is being featured in Mexico?
Yeah, so we made a short version of the film while we finish the post-production, the audio mix on the feature-length version, which is going to be about an hour long. We made a 20-minute short version that we've already done a few kind of sneak preview screenings. We did one in L.A. on 420. And we've kind of teased it in a few different places, and we submitted it to festivals, and we got into the International Cannabis Film Festival in Mexico City, which is next month. And as soon as that kind of came on my radar, searching for potential festivals to apply to, I was like, we have to get into this one. Like, what an amazing
full circle.
A group of people, and I'm sure that it's going to be amazing.
Well, it one thing that came up, and it's on everybody's mind right now, it's pretty warm in Santa Cruz, the drought in California. Can we speak to the benefits of growing in a regenerative way, these hugelkultur and building of soil, and the benefits of how water can be, you know, water retention in these farms, and kind of like dispel the myth that cannabis is such a you know, a water consuming crop. I think the key thing here is polyculture and diversity. I would love to hear your thoughts on that. I imagine that's part of the documentation in the film.
Well, I mean, there's a lot of benefits from these practices, specifically around water. One, water retention goes up like just exponentially with living soil. The more life you have, the more fungal life you have specifically, too, creates soil aggregates that clump in different ways that create oxygen and allow for more water cohesion around each different aggregate and greater water retention. So, like, you can almost have 10 times the same, the 10 times the amount of water stored in your soil if it's alive and has carbon you've been building with these practices versus soil that would be a little more inert. But it's also the way that you use water, how you collect it, when. And cannabis can actually be like grown in a way that's good for the environment and good for water. It doesn't have to be something that's we've seen all these terrible examples, and most of the press has been pretty bad of just sucking from a river at a dry time and watering plants in pots and that are in black pots with sun beating down them. Not great for the plants. The water evaporates quickly and the roots don't have something deeper to go into. And it's all soil that's been brought out to sensitive areas, and it's actually you know, mined peat and perlite and stuff like that, where instead of buying something, people are building soil on site, increasing water retention. And if you collect water through rainwater catchment at the right times, and you can actually utilize water in the winter more and build more water up, you can do groundwater recharge practices, and that actually helps the situation beyond just that cultivation site. You can help with water being there to create abundance. And like at Green Source, you can see this difference between the cultivation site and what the hillside was before. And it's there and you can see where it's dry, and just on the other side, it's just abundance everywhere. And using a little bit of water, it actually stores. And the amount of mycelium they have is actually a filtration network too. So the water that's actually running through that area and returning to streams and helping river flows later has been completely cleaned up by all of the biology. And there's no nutrients or being used, so there's no extra nitrogen and there's no pesticides being used. So literally the water is cleaner going through these cultivation sites and, wow, and helping the flows of creeks that are going to the rivers. And so the thoughtful use of water, it's not just like, oh, cannabis drinks a bunch of water. It's actually, where are you growing? How are you growing? How have you built the soil? How is that water stored? How is it being used? How can you help recharge the ground right where you are cultivating? And these are the thoughtful things that people are thinking about, because it's, instead of it being a linear thing, you suck up water and you use it, it's a cycle, and you're always giving back. So that concept of always giving back, I think, is at the heart of regenerative systems. And these farms are all so brilliant at it. And every year they learn more and they share more. And so it's an exponential process when everyone is open and sharing and giving back to the earth.
And I think that parsnips are a good example, too, of as you said, polyculture, and they were, you know, introduced by Green Source. Probably they planted one parsnip and then let it go to seed, and so now their entire hillside is full of parsnips, which are a great source of food, but then they're also, you know, they're pretty big, and so they're, you know, once you pull it out, you're left with this big hole, and that's, you know, aerating the soil, essentially. The parsnips are providing space for the water to sink deeper into the hillside, and so it's stacking functions in the best sort of way. And
also, if you don't pull them out, you can, and they're like top and dropped or mulched back in, those parsnips in the ground have created this like big amount of organic matter that then can actually hold water. Bugs will eat, worms work on, and they become like kind of like drills of of organic matter that life gets to fill into, and it becomes a place of aeration and higher carbon content.
Yeah, how cool. Yeah, I remember when I visited, it was potatoes. He had many potatoes under the cannabis. The hugel culture is so beautiful to see it in its glory. And I imagine the film. When you're spending time on these farms, what really surprised you in the process? I imagine there were moments and scenarios that I imagine with any filmmaking, things kind of develop and they organically and authentically continue to evolve. I would love to hear your thoughts on like any surprises or developments that you found on your journey.
The potatoes are a good example, because just as GreenSource is getting ready to plant their cannabis plants, what they're doing is they're pulling out some potatoes and then collecting a bunch of food that we ate that night. You know, so like as you're prepping your area to plant your cannabis, you're actually harvesting food at the same time. And that's in the film too. And I think that's a really neat thing for people to see, because those potatoes have actually been helping protect the soil, build soil life, and have been a positive process for getting that bed space ready for the cannabis. But then you pull them out and you got, you know, some tasty potatoes to make a little hobbit pie that night.
I think I was sort of, you know, I knew in theory that farming is hard work, but once you actually see how hard everyone is working all day long and literally jogging around the farm and, you know, the GreenSource
sometimes
runners.
Running.
Yeah, Daniel from Radical Herbs, always running from point A to point B. It's so kind of hard to keep up sometimes. And, GreenSource is on a pretty steep hill. So you got to go, you know, one wheelbarrow of wood chips up, down. And so trying to
follow Nick with the tripod. Yeah. That's a lot.
Keeping up with everyone as they go about their tasks. And, you know, you can't really tell them, like, oh, can you do that again? Like, you didn't get it the first time.
That's a no.
they don't have time to wait around for us. And that was a, you know, pleasant surprise of just like, this is, you guys are so committed to this. It's every day. But you love to do it. And so that's also like, I think I was, it's no one, it's easy to, I think, feel to want to express frustration at surviving as a small farm in the regulated system. But, and we do address that in the film that, you know, once the cannabis leaves their hands, it's out of everyone's control, basically. They can't sell it direct farmers market style to the consumer like they would like to. It's this really complicated system of the supply chain, distribution, getting into stores, not a lot of information in the stores about the practices and what sets their cannabis apart from industrial corporate cannabis. So, you know, we do address that, but I think for the most part, it's more so about solutions and, you know, ways that we can start to, you know, acknowledge these problems and kind of build a better alternative. And in the span of time that, you know, just the year that we've been working on this, I feel like there's been a lot of farmers markets recently, cannabis farmers markets in Humboldt, in Mendocino. This vision that everyone had when legalization happened is finally, I think, starting to happen. And so that's been cool to see.
Yeah, it's a really stunning thing, actually, like the amount of work that goes into just farming, like that's an unbelievable amount of work. How do you even do that? And then they're raising kids at the same time. And then they're like expanding the brand and working through the regulatory system and getting stuff to the shelf. It's like, it's an impossible amount of work that these farms just handle in such an amazing and professional way. And it's just so daunting. And the regulatory system has been incredibly difficult for everyone. And in trying to maintain a certain integrity, because the regulatory system goes towards this spiral of garbage, of plastic and everything. So being thoughtful in packaging and how you market, how you participate in this market, it's a lot for people who really care about this stuff. And who don't want to be a part of that system, but it's impossible because of certain regulations. But everyone's very innovative and very smart, and it's really neat to see that effort being put out at the same time of them doing the impossible work of growing food to feed a community and raising kids and growing cannabis and caring for countless animals. And, you know, Daniel from Rice and Forest Farms came out with us to D.C. where we did a sneak preview out there. And at the time, they were having about 9 different goats being – they had 9 goats for, at that time that Taylor was at the farm dealing with. And it's just constant work. You know, as he's helping us promote the film and connect people to the concepts, like she's there nursing goats and you're just helping with all that. That's the process of so many goats having babies at the same time. And then we got to go to the farm and get some pickup of some of the footage of all these baby goats just being insanely cute and eating poison oak in the forest. And immediately, like a week later, they're already benefiting the forest, and they're eating, and you know, invasive plants that might not be as good for biodiversity, and they're opening up spaces and being better for the oaks and the bays that are in that area where they don't want to be as encroached on, and all having air around each different trunk is important. But yeah, just amazing to see that process of the goats being born there, immediately having a positive effect on the forest. And then they get the milk and the amazing cheese that comes out of that. And then the soil fertility, you see the goat manure going back into the compost. And, it's a beautiful cycle to witness.
GreenSource has livestock too, right? Can you speak to the bioreactors, the important?
Beakers.
Yeah, it's so important. It's crucial.
Yeah, so much like, you know, people think about like livestock just for, you know, milk and food and take it from the animals in that way. But like their livestock's all just to build up poop. Get up on the soil, mixed with all the wood chips that they get delivered from the local like tree trimming and PG&E stuff. And they just keep taking all these diverse wood chips, mixing it with the poop. And there's a scene where you know, like a lot of farms and even ones with really good practices still rely on potting soil for all their seedlings, but GreenSource certainly does not. They build their own soil constantly, and they do it literally in the greenhouse. So it's like you see, there's a scene with Nick potting all of the plants and taking all the little seedlings, and they're just so hardy in the way he just like plucks them apart and drops them in soil that they make themselves. Like you just see this connection and this resiliency and this like kind of like, yeah, you're either harden up and be thriving or you're not going to make it. And everything is really thriving through that process. But they mix all this manure and wood chips and straws and green waste, and they just do it right on the greenhouse floor. And so when they're ready to plant in the spring and get all everything potted up, it just reaches down on the floor and fills everything up with the most amazing fertile soil you can imagine. So I think it'll be really fun for people to see that you can take all these things into your own hands and produce your resources on site.
And they have a really like ragtag kind of assorted group of animals, which I really enjoy. There's some sheep, some goats. There's a donkey.
Yes.
There was a llama who passed, unfortunately.
Oh.
But they're all just kind of hanging out together in the barn. And Liz from GreenSource, actually, she's an amazing artist, and she drew the image that we're using for the poster. It's a triangle that has each, you know, third of the triangle represents a different farm. And, you know, Bryceland, obviously they have the goats, and so there's a big image of the goat. Radical Herbs, they have sheep and cows and chickens as well, but, you know, that we chose a cow for their icon. And then GreenSource themselves, they chose the donkey as their representation.
Liz.
Slim the donkey. And, that image has been really powerful so far. And just, you know, we made postcards and we've been putting them out, you know, at events. And it really grabs people and, you know, draws people in. And it's so there's the animals and also all the different food crops. And there's cannabis in there, too, but it's actually almost kind of subtle. It's not the main
Yeah, it's very subtle. Yeah.
It's integrated into the overall, illustration of what everyone is growing.
And if you want to go to tendingthegardenfilm.com, you can see the image right on top, and then you can learn more about the film and watch the trailer.
And we're selling T-shirts and hoodies as well with that image on it.
Yeah, that's fantastic. And I see the parsnips too with the donkey. It's perfect. It's right on point with our conversation.
Right.
I remember that donkey.
It's really hard. It's amazing that she got to create this. It illustrates all of it so well and simply, and also detailed and complex too.
One thing that you kind of touched on earlier is the climate change conversation and the contribution that regenerative, it's becoming an international conversation, and this is a film for an international audience. I would love to hear your thoughts on some of these changes we're all experiencing. We spoke a little bit about drought, a little bit about wildfires on the West Coast, but I would say this film is probably really timely. I imagine you mentioned Bryceland Forest Farm speaking to stewarding and doing the work in the forestry work, right, and the controlled burns and these intentional practices. I would love to hear some more about that.
Yeah, well, the title of the film is actually, comes from a line that Daniel says when he's talking about that. It's what Western colonialists and settlers thought of as an untouched wilderness was actually a tended garden. So we're really trying to make it clear that regenerative farming is not actually a new concept. It's a new word for ancient practices. And, everyone in the film makes it a point to kind of reference the history of the people that lived here before, and before people were farming and, viewing their relationship with the earth as, we're extracting resources and we're extracting, things from the land in order to feed ourselves. But what are we giving back? And it's, I think today we don't really go about our lives thinking first and foremost about what are we giving back to the earth. And so that's kind of the overarching, it's about cannabis farming, but really it's about reconnecting to these, ways of making sure that life on earth continues for everyone, for future generations.
And, we're not going to change the world by smoking weed and just buying regenerative farm cannabis or anything, but the philosophies behind supporting people doing this localized work that gives back, and that philosophy infecting everyone else's brain in the way of returning and giving back in the way that they do things, actually can, the way that we vote with our dollars and what we choose to be a part of, I think is really important for climate change right now, and for all kinds of issues with the earth. And if we have that extractive colonial mentality and continue with that, which is actually just a short run that we've had that as humans, and return to what we've been doing for thousands and thousands of years without messing everything up, it's just incredibly powerful for us to relearn and to connect with the old practices, to promote diversity and everything that we do, to promote giving back to communities, to promote practices that heal the earth, and to build resilient local communities through those concepts, can have a huge effect. But it starts with a kind of paradigm shift in ideas around this extractive model of you just take and you make money and you have a waste stream instead of this circular system of constantly giving back and being a part of nature. And if you work against nature, you're not going to win. But if you work with it, then that's a powerful ally. You can see the way the energy flows and you can be a part of it. And you can help systems thrive through actually understanding the way water moves through a landscape, with the cycles of forest systems, the cycles of soil, the cycles throughout the seasons. And also on the equator too, these all these ideas of giving back work too. It doesn't have to be cycles of the seasons.
Well, I would say a lot of, you know, documentaries you would see on Netflix these days are pointing towards an answer that, you know, there's a thing that you can do to solve, here's the problem, and we're overfishing the oceans, right?
Stop eating fish.
Here's the thing that you should do, stop eating fish, and then, you know, a lot of people are very influenced by that to make certain changes in their diet or their lifestyle, and I think we don't have one specific takeaway that we're hoping people have, but just being more thoughtful about where your things come from that you purchase, that goes for everything, that goes for your weed, your food, and the systems that you support by doing so. And
support the things you actually support, you know?
Yeah, and maybe, yeah, you know, by switching to plant-based meat might seem like a better idea, you know, but...
But how is that plant grown?
Yeah, you know? Who are you?
Is this GMO soy? Is it pesticides? You know, that's another warfare on the soil, and, like, think about all of the microbes and the birds and animals that actually are damaged through the production of plants, you know, and it should be a good thing. I'd love a plant-based diet, but, like, cows and other animals can be a part of, through rotational grazing, can be a positive part of the environment. So it's more how we do things than what it is. And soy and corn have been incredibly damaging for the planet. So, like, you know, it is awesome to have a plant-based diet and to think about these things, but where are those plants coming from? How are they being grown is a very important question to be asking for the people that are thoughtful around these things.
Yeah, that's well said. So important. The importance of the regenerative conversation does include, in many ways, cattle and animals, and it's the full gamut of all of the biology that is on the farm. And I think it's really exciting what you guys have created, is, and these three farms specifically are very special. It's very exciting. So how could our audience support what are the next actions? Where are you guys at right now as far as this process? Cause it is it's a long road to, you know, bring a film to fruition. So I'd love to hear your thoughts on how could we, help?
Yeah. We're currently in post-production. So just almost done with editing, and we're about to start the sound mix. We're working with our friend Tasso in Los Angeles, and he's an amazing musician and just audio wizard. So yeah, we're hoping to be able to compose some original music with him and some of his network of musicians down there. And so we're trying to raise some money to pay them. We have some other music we're hoping to get licensed. So yeah, all of the money that we're trying to raise right now will go towards just, you know, making sure it sounds really good, making sure everything is polished, and then we'll be submitting to festivals, and it's hopefully out later this year, and we'll be doing sneak preview screenings. And so you can, if you sign up for the mailing list on our website, you'll be the first to hear about those opportunities. And the website is tendingthegardenfilm.com. And you can see the perks of the hoodies and t-shirts, as we mentioned, that have the logo on it. We also have a few other exciting perks that you can see if you, yeah.
Special BioVortex Seed Surprise 420.
Yeah. How cool. So
the only way to
yeah. So special. Yeah. Fantastic.
And yeah, if you we also have a Facebook page, and the Instagram is Regenerative Cannabis Farming. So we've been posting about the film, but you can also see other, you know, previous videos and photos on there from what we've been doing in the past.
in the with the special BioVortex cultivars, I see a picture that was shared, which we will post. These massive plants you guys are standing in front of. Where are these, and who's cultivated these?
Is that the moon?
Yeah.
Moon maid? Yeah. Those are.
How cool.
That's the garden where she was growing the cherry moon and the Orange Valley sun, which are cultivars that I helped develop for her place. And she just does an amazing job. You can buy them at the dispensary too. Amazing flavors.
Those ones,
the
Orange Valley Sun.
The photo is, we're in front of Orange Valley Sun for sure.
It's gorgeous. So special. Yeah, it's very, very, very. I'll share that with our audience. And after this, what's next? Is there another film in the mix or anything that you guys are marinating in for the future?
Yeah.
Probably not anything that we can share yet. I mean, just in the idea stage and, trend.
Potential deep genetic dive back to the source, but it's like.
Yeah.
Like
there you go. Fantastic.
We'll see what happens.
Yeah, maybe an international film, possibly. Who knows?
We have been
going back,
considering
back
that.
To the source.
Mm-hmm. Oh, but, I love it. Yeah, I really.
They're going to be, switching from production, switching from making the film into showing the film and promoting the film and doing podcasts like this. That's probably going to be our main thing for the next 6 months to a year, just getting it out there in the world. Yeah.
We'll take up some traveling time, but.
Back to the roots, eventually.
Eventually, yeah.
You got to tend to the garden to get back to the roots, right? Well, I commend you on your lovely work and your ongoing stewardship of the community. I'm a huge fan, huge supporter. It's full solidarity with what you're doing. I'm so proud of you both. And we'll continue to do whatever necessary to help support this cause and to support this wonderful film. And we're very honored to have you on the show. And we'll continue to keep in touch. If you need anything, if you ever come to Santa Cruz, let me know. It would be an honor to have a screening here at the Rio Theater or somewhere in Santa Cruz. We'll figure it out. And if it does manifest, we'll probably have you back in the studio.
Absolutely. Yeah, it would be really fun to do a sneak preview there. And I just appreciate you so much. What year was it when I first came into the studio and did that show?
2015, I think, or 2016. Yeah, it's a long time ago.
And I just really appreciate and honor and love the work that you've been doing since then and before and all the people that you've had on and your continued support of these really important things and these amazing farms and these practices and getting that information out there and sharing. You've been incredible part of this community.
Give thanks. Oh, wow. That made my day. Made my year. Can't wait. Well, it's been great. So thank you both and have a wonderful weekend. And thank you, Santa Cruz. Stay up. Go out there. Tend your garden. Grow something green and be most excellent with each other, to each other. I'm Smiley Green, Christopher Carr. We'll see you next week.
KSCO Santa Cruz, KOMY La Selva Beach,
the Swirling Broadcasting System.